you're listening to Tax Talk, a podcast series from the Irish Tax Institute, which explores current issues in the world of taxation. I'm your host, Samantha McCochran. In this episode, we'll seek to get some perspective on the massive 14 billion euro budget for the year ahead, which was announced earlier this week. We'll take a look at its likely longer-term impact on our economy, its implications for businesses in our domestic and multinational sectors, and what it means for future developments in Irish tax policy and administration. I'm joined by Shahini Day, founder of Empeel, an award-winning digital health startup that provides solutions for the prevention and management of chronic conditions. Austin Hughes, freelance economist and well-known analyst of consumer sentiment, and Tom Reynolds, president of the Irish Tax Institute. You're all very welcome here today. Shahini, I might start with you because to some extent this budget was billed as one that did a lot for enterprise. So as the founder of an innovative startup, what would your take be on the various measures that were supposedly there to enhance your type of business?
Yes, there are several things to be quite happy about, although we do need to understand the nitty-gritties. The finance bill probably will give us more clarity on a lot of things. But definitely, you know, the likes of increase in R&D tax credit from 25 to 30%, and then doubling the amount of reimbursement in year one, which went from 25 to 50,000 euros. They definitely help. But at the same time, we've talked so many times about the complication of application of these tax credits to get these tax credits. So we also actually like the fact that there will be a subcommittee to look at these and then the public consultation. The other things which I think are quite welcome are definitely the government is trying, has acknowledged that there are funding issues. So the reduction in capital gains tax, we've been lobbying for that for quite a while. Now, there are a few things I can, during the podcast, we can talk about it in further details, because there are a few things we need to get clarity on. Then on the EIIS side, again, the 500,000 for investments held over 5 years, that's a good thing. But the main problem with EIIS is the onus on the entrepreneurs is too much. So we need to see that something around that. I know EIIS is not fully under the Irish government. There are a lot of EU nuances there, but still the onus we need to definitely do something about that.
Just the simplification topic there, because I think that's something the Institute has been very vocal on for many years. So give us a flavour of what that involves, like in terms of one of those schemes that you mentioned, EIIS, for example, what kind of level of paperwork and red tape do you come across? Is it quite as bad as it might sound?
I think like for the EIIS, definitely they're we actually take help from our accountants on the EIIS. But the bigger issue with EIIS is the onus on the on the entrepreneurs. The clawback, the whole clawback, all lies on the entrepreneurs. So we are quite scared to actually go for EIIS. Whereas on the paperwork, I would say on the tax credit, R&D tax credit, there's a huge amount of paperwork and we have to pay somebody to do those, help us with those paperwork. And what happens is, just to give you an example, say if you are eligible for, say, a 40,000 tax credit, and then for these companies, for these startups, generally we would get grants and you actually take off the grants from the bottom line of the R&D tax credit. So if you get a grant of 30 grand, so after all those paperwork, you actually end up with 10 grand and then you have to pay the accountants that's helping you or the firm that's helping you to actually make the application. So there's very little left after all that.
All the effort that you put in, yeah. And Tom, just to give some perspective from the multinational side where you have considerable experience, I have, you know, heard the big companies raise simplification of the tax system as part of their wish list, an aspect of their wish list. What kind of experience would you have? I mean, surely large companies are much better equipped than a smaller startup to deal with complex tax documentation, etc. So is it a concern for the big companies as well?
Very much so. And I suppose the example I would give, just looking at a corporate tax return, In the 1990s, it was 4 pages. 2001, it was 8 pages. Now it's 56 pages. So it's a huge amount of paperwork. And I think from our perspective, one of the things that come into the budget is to review the interest deductibility. And there are pages upon pages. I think it's 56 pages for interest deductibility. And I think that doesn't help businesses because it doesn't create certainty. And businesses require certainty. And if certainty isn't there, it means that it impacts how they make decisions. And I think that that's critical from where we're at now in Ireland in terms of business, because a strong corporate and SME sector is key for growth. And if this doesn't happen, it'll have impacts for our economic and our society. So when we look at that, we've got to look at simplification. But also, I think in looking at it, the corporate tax is becoming much more standardised with Pillar 2 coming into play. And I think within that, we've got to look at how we do things and we got to simplify, because if we don't simplify, we're going to have more complexity and it's going to impact investment. And I think just coming back to Shahini, I think from the Institute point of view, we've made various submissions and it's good to see the public consultation happening, where we would have highlighted on the EIIS scheme that the administration burden is very severe and it puts all the pressure back on the startups. And what we would say is, if you compare it to the UK, it's very different. You can get advanced ruling, the tax rate is much lower. On the R&D side, if we think about that, for SMEs, we have kind of requested that we were looking for simplification and documentation requirements for SMEs, because you have the same documentation requirements for a large multinational as you do have for an SME, which seems rather ridiculous given the sizes of the business and the resources that they have available. So I think from our perspective, we would say it's a critical aspect. And it's been mentioned in the budget. And what I would ask is that effectively sufficient resources is dedicated to achieving this in the short term and that we react quickly, because, you know, Pillar 2 comes into play next year. And I think, you know, with Pillar 2 coming into play, companies are going to consider their location, you know, with the changes in the rules and the increase in the tax rate from 12.5% to 15% as well.
And is simplification a much bigger exercise than it sounds? And would it be quite costly?
I don't know if it's quite costly. I think it's looking at the rules and how you simplify them. I think if you look at some other jurisdictions, you can see certain areas have been simplified very well. And I think one of the prime examples is coming back to SMEs and Indigenous organisations when they're looking for the Employee Investment Incentive Scheme. How that's operated in the UK is very different here. And I don't understand why it's so complicated here.
So just to take a step back for a minute, Austin. So Thomas mentioned there Pillar 2. Certainly the backdrop was, Minister McGrath mentioned the risks in the global economy. You know, the context has been a bit more uncertainty from a tax point of view, from a tech point of view. There's a whole, you know, changing backdrop there for the global economy, which we're very exposed to. So what was your read on it? The kind of backdrop that the picture was painted. Do you think we're in good shape? Do you think the risks are really quite something that we should be concerned about?
I think we're in reasonable shape in a very unreasonable, uncertain world. And I think that's one of the issues that causes the problems that we've been talking about for the last few minutes. There is a sense there where the tax authorities are trying to cover all the bases. In part, that's an historic issue. It goes back to a time where activity was significantly tax-driven rather than enterprise-driven. And so you have this sort of legacy issue of, let's try and clear for all the unforeseen contingencies. Let's map out for all the possibilities, rather than seeing how does an ordinary business go about the normal, you know, job of business, rather than spending every weekend filling in tax forms. And I think that's a cultural change that is going to be, it's going to take a little bit of time over the next while. And again, you know, in the sort of uncertain world that we live in, where there are so many calls for measures to deal with energy, to deal with inflation, to deal with mortgage supports, you are getting into a more complex, complicated fiscal situation. And the capacity to actually be able to do that on one stage and also stand back and say, we also need a simple tax system that requires, again, as Tom was saying, a huge amount of resourcing and a huge amount of focus, which you know, given the sort of pressures in the economy the government is maybe otherwise focused on. And to return to maybe the point to make, you know, I think overall the budget has to be seen in a fairly positive light. Unlike some commentators, it's not reckless. It won't ruin the economies. It won't mean that we run into problems with the public finances. It strikes a balance between necessary supports for businesses and households that are struggling to deal with big problems in terms of cost of living and a very uncertain global economy on one side, and keeping the public finances on a sustainable path on the other. And the way in which some of the supports have come, the sort of once-off, means they're not permanently embedded in the public finances. And secondly, we have the introduction of these various funds that will help in terms of longer term issues for the economy. So by and large, in an economy where the world looks uncertain, and as we saw in the events of the weekend in Israel, you know, the world is turning from one sort of shock and crisis to another on an almost weekly basis. It's difficult to say that this is a budget for the ages, but it's a decent holding budget. It doesn't have major negative issues around it. You know, if you look, we're one of two countries in the euro area that's going to have a surplus this year and next year. The other is Cyprus. The surplus is between 2 and 4% of GDP, really good, whereas there's a deficit on average most other countries. Countries like Italy and France running into all sorts of problems in the public finances. So by and large, a budget that is decent, and it isn't overtly, nakedly political either. So in that sense, it probably doesn't satisfy anyone, but it does achieve a reasonable balance.
So the warnings ahead of the budget were, you know, the government going beyond its national spending rule. And yet there was a lot of voices looking for lots of money because of, you know, we are going to be heading into election territory very soon. So you think it kind of balanced that reasonably well, those competing concerns?
Reasonably well. The Fiscal Advisory Council's post-budget review says it risks raising inflation by 0.25% next year. That's small beer in terms of cost of living measures. You know, the September inflation numbers that we've just had, 6.4%. So in that sense, a 0.2, 0.3, it's a rounding error. And that 6.4% rise is telling you, you know, households need support, so do businesses. The Central Statistics Office says we've now had 24 months in which prices have risen year on year more than 5%. So there was a need to do something. You simply can't leave the economy and say, don't worry, demand and supply will take care of themselves. That's not the job of a government, either for an economy or for a society.
Okay, so in terms of the backdrop we were talking about, Tom and Shoshini, you will have a perspective on this as well, hopefully. But this whole idea that we can't compete on our, you know, lower tax rate anymore for the big global companies, that we need to look at other levers that we can pull. And, you know, Minister Michael McGrath himself said that, you know, the competitiveness of our personal tax system is now a big factor for inward investment. So they did make some gestures in terms of income tax. It was a 1.3 billion euro package on that front. Shoshini, do you want to go first on this? Just in terms of what do you think of the income tax measures and how relevant is that to your business and your workforce?
Yeah, so as I said, and as Austin mentioned, that it's probably a bit more skewed towards the personal side rather than the enterprise side, but that's fine, because what I look at from as an entrepreneur is the talent issue, and to attract more talent, definitely the broadening of the tax band is welcome, personally as well, it's welcome. But also on the housing side, I think it makes a big difference, because talent is expensive in Ireland, but also part of it is because of the housing issue, the cost of housing. So any support around that is actually welcomed by the workforce. So I think that's, yes, as Austin mentioned, it's a rounding error. There is definitely an inflation risk there, but it's probably very much smaller than in the bigger picture.
And I know that it has been noted that Ireland has become less attractive because of its personal tax system in terms of international investment. So are these measures small fish in the bigger scheme of things, or are they, you know, are they going to be helpful, do you think, for that kind of Ireland's appeal to international players?
I think the raising of the ban by 2000 is very helpful because it brings us more competitive with our EU competitors as well, in terms of we were below it, and that this helps to raise where we are in that ranking. So it is important. And I think as well that we can't forget that personal tax and is one element of it, but I think that there's another element of why companies come to Ireland, in terms of it's how we do business. We've got a very strong talent pool. And on the other side, we have issues, as Suhini has raised, in terms of accommodation is very difficult at this point in time. And I think there's been some measures that have been added in the budget that will help, but it's not going to address it immediately. I think in reality, we all know it's going to take a number of years. And I think as well that our transportation system, it's an area that needs to be looked at. But I think what's good coming into play is that we have the fund for infrastructure and climate and nature, which is 2 billion a year over the next 7 years. So there is a focus on long-term sustainability and for the future, which I think is good as well.
And housing isn't strictly a tax issue, but as we've heard, it is an issue that's really, really pertinent for businesses. It's been something that's become, you know, it was whispered at first, but it's been shouted now that there is an issue with getting staff because you can't get accommodation for them. So I think we heard the government saying it was an unprecedented budget for housing, opposition saying it's not enough. Will we ever get housing right? But what do you think on the budget measures, Austin?
Again, I think there is, in terms of housing, the budget couldn't really solve the housing crisis, but it could have made it a lot worse. And the problems that Italy's having with its budget deficit at this moment in time relate a lot to a daft super bonus scheme where people got 110% tax credits in relation to home improvements and that. And it really is breaking the Italian public finances without materially changing the outlook for the economy. So the risk is that, you know, people think there is a silver bullet here, that if they just did something, everything would fall into place. It is going to take several years to get housing anyway better. And we have made small steps. I would like bigger steps. I would also think that the funds, I think the balance between the long-term fund, the Future Ireland Fund, and the Infrastructure and Climate Change Fund is wrong, because I think problems around housing and climate change and infrastructure are more pressing issues requiring larger commitments over the next 5 to 10 years. And I think that's where you keep your talent pool and your economic progress on track, because people want to be in an economy that is green, that has opportunities in terms of accommodation, infrastructure, and that. And that's a very important issue. And also, you know, taxation. The taxation measures, by the way, are very modest. It's very interesting. It looks, in terms of things like the mortgage interest relief, as though they were forced into doing something in spite of the best intentions of perhaps the public servants, because the idea that it's capped, you know, it's a temporary measure for a year, that we're looking at only certain people qualifying, that could actually backfire politically, but it's intended not to do very much. And I think that's the fear in terms of housing, that if you tried a big measure, it was going to make things worse rather than better. It's going to take time. It's going to take time partly because the economy is growing well. There are a lot more of us living here, working here, and that makes housing pressures worse, no matter what the government does. So in that respect, housing is going to remain a problem. And I think we'll need a budget that's more aggressive on housing and climate change. But again, because of the politics, as well as the uncertainty around the current economic environment globally, I don't think you could reasonably expect something to change dramatically this year.
In terms of the simplification measures, but a couple of other measures where a little bit left on the long finger in terms of its consultations and being further looked at in the months ahead. How do you feel about that? You know, particularly the simplification one, which we've covered, which is going to be looked at further by a tax subcommittee or subgroup. So I'm just wondering, is that, it's something the Institute, as we said, has been looking for a long time. How much time do we need to look at these measures, or should it be something that we, you know, act on kind of immediately?
I suppose I'd give an example of that. The participation exemption, we've been asking and pushing for that for a very long period of time. So finally, we had an announcement, and I suppose the expectation was that that would come into play on the 1st of January 2024. It's not actually coming into play until the 1st of January 25, so that's delayed it by another 14 months, which means that we're an outlier in comparison to the rest of the EU, which is not helpful in terms of attracting investment. But more importantly, we're back into another consultation process, and I'm not sure what more it's going to achieve. And what I would say as well, as part of that, we haven't dealt with the branch exemption, which again is important from a corporate sector perspective. So I think we probably need to have less consultation or much quicker consultation, and that we can react faster and make decisions.
Shahini, in terms of your comment that there was a lot for individuals, you know, in terms of income tax and lots of other bits and pieces, childcare, you know, incentives and improvements there. What would you like to have seen then for enterprise and business? Are there specific measures that you were very keen to see that didn't come through?
Yeah, so you just mentioned on the childcare again, that was, I would say, that helps in the talent pool as well. It keeps a lot more people in the market for jobs. So that was definitely something. And from Dublin Chamber perspective as well, we lobbied for that for quite some time. So that's welcome. What would I have liked to see? I would have liked to probably see a bit more support on the funding side, because definitely the particularly seed, pre-seed and seed extension or whatever, these are so blurred nowadays, particularly on the seed side. The funding is really an issue, and the measures that has been taken, I don't think they will work out till we actually see a turn in market. And by that time, basically the funds that are available for these investments will not come to market till the market actually turns, you know. So it's actually not doing enough. It's actually not doing much. So we are saying that there is funds available, but they're not coming to market. They're not coming to the right people. So that's one of the things I think I would have liked to see as an entrepreneur, as somebody who's already in market raising funds at the moment. So that's one. On the angel investment side, I just mentioned that the CGT, they've lowered it. That's excellent news. We need to get more clarity on, there are a few things that they have mentioned. One is you have to own it for own at least 5% in the companies. Now, most of the angels will not invest up to 5%. They are mainly, probably remain below 5%. Now, I can argue both sides of the story. If you're owning 5%, if you're keeping that 5% limit, you are probably encouraging these angel investors to come in on the following round to top up. So that's a good thing. But at the same time, that will restrict angel investors as well. It actually doesn't do much. That they, unless they have 5%, they don't get the CGT. The other thing they have mentioned is, I think that it's up to double the investment. Now, these investors are investing in innovative, high-risk companies. They probably invest in few of these companies, and to take diversify the risk, and with the expectation that one or two of them will actually do 10 times. Rather than double. So that again is a big issue, I think. So these are the things I think would have been very useful. I mean, it's a good start.
Mm-hmm. More to do.
Yes, but more to do.
Just to add to that, I think that highlights the point, is that when we look at our capital gains tax rate, it's 33%. That's something that needs to be decreased. I think it needs to move to a minimum at least 25% in comparison to other EU countries as well. And it highlights here the difficulty that Shahini faces as well in terms of how she does her startup as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there anything that you were keen to see that you didn't see, or generally was it one for everyone in the audience in terms of everyone gets a little bit of what they wanted?
I think what I would say is it'd be interesting to see what's in the finance bill, because I think for me, there is a lot of interest within the budget. There's been a good focus on the SME side in terms of what the changes that have come in, and he has committed to simplifying the whole process and making it much more easy to invest, etc. And I think investment is critical, because once you have investment, it encourages growth and it also encourages innovation. And I think from our perspective, innovation is critical in Ireland. So I would think for me, what I'd like to see is these various reliefs being made a lot more simpler and easily to implement, and that we look very strongly at how we reform the whole corporate tax system in terms of making it much more simpler, because that's critical to maintain our competitiveness.
So in terms of the, we've talked a lot about the tax reductions there, were there some increases that went under the radar? And, you know, we've talked quite a bit in previous podcasts about big government and the need for more money going into, you know, fund our future pensions and all those big conversations about how we're going to deal with our future. So were there some measures there that kind of went under the radar that were actually tax raising measures?
Well, I think, first of all, it's worth repeating again that we are at a point where the trend is towards higher taxes. If you look at the budget day measures, we're either talking about, you know, in terms of the specific measures on budget day, 5 billion spending to 1 billion taxation, or announcements, maybe 14 billion spending to 1 billion taxation. So we are looking at, you know, a focus on an economy in which government is seen as a much more important player in the future. And as you say, the particular reference to the funds, it's the role of government spending in terms of driving climate change, in terms of driving infrastructure. The notion of what role tax plays in these is still really not a topic for discussion. Part of that is that I think politically as well as economically, there is a view that maybe business doesn't pay sufficient taxes. I think not just in Ireland, I think that's a global view that, you know, corporation taxes need to be higher. And in those circumstances, the ideas that we're talking about here run contrary to a lot of the thinking that's affecting, you know, the decision makers in Merrion Street and in Brussels and in Washington as well. So I think that's a very important aspect, that the pressure is for taxation just to deliver funds to keep the show on the road, rather than keeping the show on the road itself through more business activity. And I think there needs to be something of a rethink there, particularly in terms of areas like carbon taxation and how that relates to broader business taxation. But, you know, to look under the bonnet a little bit, you know, remember in this budget, while people are talking about a giveaway budget in that, we've had VAT on hospitality sector increase. We do have corporation tax for the larger companies increasing next year significantly. We also have a very small increase of 0.1% in PRSI, but that is something that's going to be an increased cost. You know, we have carbon tax increases. So those are all pointers in the wind. Very quiet, nobody's really talking about them, but they're talking about an environment in which the issue is about getting the money in rather than making the money matter. And I think that's something that it really is important for business, for the Institute of Taxation, and for economists to think more about what is the optimal taxation for Ireland, rather than what's the maximum, you know, the old kind of Colbert idea of squeezing the goose and get it with the least amount of hissing. That's not what makes an economy work. What makes an economy work is a taxation system where there are rewards to enterprise, where people, you know, risk adjusted, where it's not a case of people getting something for nothing, but it is a case where it actually makes sense to go and try and build a business, employ people, and come and live in this country. You know, all those elements matter, but they're not really at the crux of decision making at the moment.
Could I just add on to that? I think there's always a focus on the amount of corporation tax and the rate. I think what we have to be a bit more is how we look at what is the total tax contribution that comes. It's not corporation tax. We've got payroll tax. We're quite high on our payroll tax. We've got indirect tax that comes into play. And I think you have to look at the total contribution that a business actually gives to the country. And that's something that we don't seem to focus on. And I think maybe we just need to have a look at that too in terms of what the total package of what companies contribute to the country.
And in terms of the two funds that were announced, there's been a lot of talk about what we should do with all this windfall tax. Was it a fairly positive solution to that question about how we would, you know, put that money aside effectively and deal with our future generations with our, you know, one-off run of wealth that we've had now that may not sustain into the future?
It's a partial solution. My sense is that we have really pressing medium-term issues around infrastructure, housing, health, and carbon. We really, really need to make major changes there. And I think that the idea that there's 2 billion going in there and that the total pool might be 14 billion, whereas the minister talked about the Future Ireland Fund being maybe 100 billion, seems to get the priorities wrong. I think if we get housing, infrastructure and carbon taxes right, we'll have a stronger economy, a nicer place to work, to live over the next while. And that will help reduce some of these longer term issues. So I think the balance is wrong on that. But you can see again, there is a very strong sense that if we don't put this money away, the politicians are going to waste it. So there is this need for these sort of announcements. And it's, again, my sense that they try to maximise the money put away rather than optimise the way it's put away.
Okay, interesting. And Shuini, in terms of climate, I know there's a big and small businesses are completely focused on a lot of climate issues in lots of different aspects, not just from an entrepreneurial point of view, but from how they do their own businesses. Were there enough measures on climate for you, or was there more, again, that we could be done on that?
I'll actually combine a couple of things here. I agree with Austin that more drastic measures are needed, but at least we have started with this a fund there, which is ring fencing. For infrastructure as well. And I mean, personally, I'll tell you, I live in Castleknock. We were promised a Metro Link in 2015 and we are in 2023. We have no vision of that. So we definitely need something. And the traffic situation is so bad. I see everybody has to drive here in my locality, which is not right. So we need to look at the longer term. We need to make a place where everybody is, the quality of life is good, the environment is good, you know. So definitely we need much more to be done. But at the same time, as I said, I always look at glass half full. So I'm happy that at least that's there. The other thing I would say on the longer term, I will combine the climate as well as with the health. I was quite disappointed with the health budget. And if you were looking at, again, that 100 billion for the Future Ireland Fund, if we are looking at our population, it is an aging population. There is a significant health issues we are looking at, and the cost of health services are going up so much. We need to, and if you look at the budget, only 100 million is going into the new measures. That, and that's, last year it was 250 million, and that wasn't enough. And this year it's even cut even more. So it's quite scary for me to live in this country and think that when I'm growing old and I'm seeing, as we grow older in this country, if we are not spending enough in our new measures of health services, new way of looking at our population health, it is longer term, we will be in a situation where we are actually ignoring the biggest elephant in the room, and we will be in a lot more trouble.
Okay, and that's why we need startups like you to help steer us along the way on the health questions that lie ahead. Look, thank you very much for joining us today. That's it for this episode of Tax Talk, and we'll get you next time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.